Let's face it, you didn't become a pastor to be an accountant, and you didn't attend seminary to learn about software. Still, managing money is crucial for any thriving organization, which means if you're doing anything wrong, then you're risking the financial health and vitality of your church. Thankfully, our friends at Belay know this well. Belay, an innovative staffing solution with over 10 years of experience serving churches, has successfully matched thousands of organizations with experienced U.S.-based virtual bookkeepers, virtual assistants, and social media strategists. They're offering all of our podcast listeners a free download of their resource, 5 Ways a Church Bookkeeper Can Transform Your Day, which shares the 5 most positive changes that will come out of hiring a bookkeeper for your church. Just text LIFEWAY to 55123. That's LIFEWAY to 55123 for your free download. You're now one step closer to reclaiming precious time every week to do what only you can do. Now on to group answers.
LIFEWAY Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel, and as always, with the guitar as a prop in the background on our Zoom call, Chris Surratt.
It's only
Chris,
a prop.
We're back only and better than ever.
I'm a wannabe guitar player. I do occasionally break it out and play, but yeah, I do like having it in the back so people think that I'm a well-rounded person.
Well, let's be honest here. You are a well-rounded person, and you are a musician. I would say that you are not a practicing musician at this point.
No.
In other words, you're not growing in your craft.
Yeah. So,
but you can play a guitar.
Yeah. At one point in my life, I was a professional, I guess you would say, because I got my pay from music. That was the first probably 10 years of my adult life was doing music. But yeah, since then, my fingers bleed when I try to play because I just don't play enough. It's sad.
I also have a guitar as a prop in the background and cannot play it. When we went into full lockdown, you know, they're not terribly expensive. And I thought, you know, I get some commute time back. I've always wanted to know how to play. And so bought an acoustic and thought, yeah, I had this romanticized vision of me, right, you know, toiling away and somehow making a third act as a band member or songwriter. And that's just, my hands just don't work that way. That's what I learned. My hands don't work.
Didn't you have a ukulele at one point? Do you still have that hanging around?
No, I have a mandolin. I still get that out and play it. But, you know, it's just not featured in too many pop songs.
Yeah.
Hey, so I wanted to ask you as we get started here, we're going to talk about a book that we both read. It's called The First 90 Days. Yep. And I think you and I would both recommend that book for any transition that you're making. It is about how you approach the first, I guess, quarter or first 90 days of any kind of new role or transition. And it works as a reset. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But Chris, I want to ask you, you're an avid reader.
I try.
What would be, if you were going to recommend one book right now, what would that be?
Yeah, one that's really hit me, and this is one of those that was making kind of the rounds in 2020. Everybody was reading it, and I don't know about you, Brian, but when I hear everybody's reading a book, I tend to not read that book. Just, I don't know, there's something in me. But then I picked it up recently, and I'm absolutely loving it. It's Gentle and Lowly by Dane Ortlund. Ah. And yeah. I mean, there's been some controversy around it. There were some, at least one review that was very critical of it, but a lot of people love it. And I'll put myself in the camp of one of those that absolutely loves it. I'm really enjoying it. I'm only about five six chapters in, but I'm reading it every morning, and it's really good. I'm telling you, it's really good.
A lot of people that I like, it's the reading list that we're talking about, and most of the people that we're around have a reading list, yep. And I have my reading list, and that's one of the things that I tend to be most exclusive about. So I don't give a lot of book recommendations, and don't look for many. But a lot of people that I respect, like their reading habits and their reading list, have recommended this book, and I've said that it's one of the best books that they have read. What is it about it that is so good?
Yeah, you broke up a little bit, but I think what you're asking is, why is it so good? I think it's, especially for this time when you open up social media or you open up really any media, and there's such vitriol on both sides. There's anger. There's just this feeling of violent conversations happening. And this book really paints the picture of Jesus not being that. And it comes straight from scripture. Gentle and lowly is straight from how Jesus described himself. And so I think it really, if we're going to be like Christ, and that's what I hope that as disciples we are, that's our goal, then that's the picture that I want to go for. I want the Jesus that is loving, that is kind, that is fatherly, that wants me no matter what, no matter what I've gone through or done, Jesus is still there. And in this world of not knowing what's there a lot of times, and things are shifting every day, and I think as believers, we need that. We need that Jesus. And this is really painting a great picture of that Jesus for me.
Yeah, that's probably something that I'll pick up one of these days. I'm that way as well. I'm not, just because everybody's reading it doesn't turn me off, but it also doesn't automatically make me want to read it. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to be looking at a book I've already referenced, The First 90 Days, and it's this idea of matching strategy to situation. I know when I was in business school, this was one of the strategic pivots that I think was one of my takeaways during that time, that you have to be sure that the strategy, that is the vision you're casting, the direction that you have established, is consistent with the situation that you're in. And in the world of business leadership, that needs to match your assets and your people. And so Chris and I have both been exposed to this book recently, and we thought, hey, why not apply matching strategy to situation to small group leadership?
Yeah, I mean, so many people right now are changing jobs, changing careers. In fact, there was a recent survey by a large company that said that somewhere around 2/3 of workers are either changing careers or thinking about changing careers. And I've seen that at churches. There are a lot of people that are looking for new positions and changing churches, changing jobs, changing positions. You and I are kind of going through this. I mean, I just took a job on the West Coast with Harvest Christian Fellowship. I'm now their discipleship pastor. You just stepped into a new role at Lifeway. Things are shifting. And this is a book that I started reading several years ago, and I continue to go back to it. In fact, every time I have a kind of positional change, even within, Lifeway or within a church, it's super helpful. And I just recently started reading through it again as I took on this new job. And I think this chapter is the third chapter of the book is really critical as you look at how am I going to approach this new position? How am I going to approach this new job? Because it breaks it into five categories of probably what you're walking into. And so just, it's the STARS, STARS model. The first one is a startup. Then there's a turnaround, accelerated growth, realignment, and sustaining success. So as you're stepping into your new role, and we'll break those down in just a second, probably it fits one of those categories more than the other. And you need to understand what that is so you can approach it in the right way.
Yeah. And the idea here is that these are not sequential. This is an assessment.
Correct.
This is, as Chris just said, this is what you're stepping into. And I would dare say, Chris, that a lot of small group leaders, and those are the point people, the small group leaders in any given situation are in new group startup situation. That's probably where a lot of the leaders are, but a lot of the small group pastors and ministers of education, there would be more of a case for a close examination and assessment of the ministry at large and determining which one of these five, I wouldn't call them categories, but these five environments you think is the best fit for where you are.
Yeah.
Where the ministry currently is.
Yeah. And I get this question a lot because I get a lot of emails from group pastors, directors looking for a new position, and they're asking me what do I think that it would take to have success in wherever they're stepping into. And I think you have to recognize these, like you said, environments before you can even consider that. And the first one is a startup. A startup is just what it sounds. It's a, you know, maybe you're going into a church that hasn't done groups before and they're wanting to do groups, or it's a complete new system and you're starting from the ground. And that's actually an exciting environment to step into as a new employee or a new director. You know, you can set things from the very beginning. You can establish the norms. You can establish the culture, the DNA. You can do things right from the beginning. There's an energy that's involved. You know, I help plant a church. And when you're planting something new, there's just this energy of everything that you're doing is exciting. There's no rigid preconceptions about it. And so you can really establish something with a startup. Now, I would say that most churches probably have some type of a system, but there are churches that are just haven't done it yet and they want to establish a group system. And actually, the conference that we co-host with the Small Group Network, Align, is great for if you're walking into a situation like a startup.
So those are some of the opportunities of startup, which I think can be overlooked sometimes. The challenges would be just as, I think, intuitive, and that is that you've got to, as Chris said, you've got to build from the ground up, building the strategy, structures, and systems from scratch without a clear framework or boundaries. And implicit in that is just recruiting and putting a team together that is exciting. You have the opportunity to pull that team together, but the challenge there is, There's no what I've heard referred to as organizational intelligence. There's no one that's necessarily been there before because it's a startup. It hasn't happened. And then a lot of times in these situations, because it's unproven, you're having to move forward with limited resources. So it's just some of the things to keep in mind with startup. I think here the opportunities trump the challenges. I think the startup in terms of groups leadership is probably, I don't know if it's the easiest, but I think it's the one, Chris, you just referenced, the energized people. Yeah. I think it's the one that has the most automatic energy and buy-in, if you will.
It does, but you're right. It can be overwhelming when you think of it because you're starting with a blank page, and if there's not a structure already there, you're building that structure. So just be careful not to get too overwhelmed and take it one step at a time. So establish what it means to be a leader in a system like that. Establish your basic training. You know, start with a handful of groups so you can kind of establish that culture. But don't get overwhelmed trying to build an entire system overnight.
So turnaround, I have a pretty good handle on what this means like as a business leader. And it is one of these environments when everyone agrees that you're in trouble and that change is needed. You know, turnaround is exactly that. Is 180 degrees from the direction you're going and turn it around. And this is probably the one, to me, that's the most difficult in the business world. How does this translate into small group leadership or group leadership?
Yeah, I think that a turnaround is a church that has maybe had some strong groups in the past, strong Sunday school classes or strong groups, and that just for whatever reason, maybe changes in culture or not having intentional leadership, just hasn't seen a lot of success lately. And so maybe not a lot of people in groups, or people are not growing in the groups. And so it needs a turnaround. And the great thing about a turnaround is pretty much everyone recognizes that change is necessary. That when you have a turnaround, the leadership knows, okay, we haven't had a lot of people in groups, or we're not seeing a lot of fruit from groups. And so we need a change. So when you're stepping into a situation like that, you can get people on board pretty quick. You can get wins pretty quickly just by changing some of the processes or making it easier for people to get into groups. But a little success goes a long way in a turnaround type situation, because you were brought in to turn it around. And so as soon as you can start doing that, it really goes a long way.
In a turnaround situation, those that I've been in, the, for lack of a better word, just the pressure, I feel like every day that I'm not doing something tangible, something actionable, moving this organization or the decision making along, is a day lost. I would encourage you, if you find yourself in the situation, to fight that sense. I don't know if that's true for everybody, but that's something that I have felt. And no one is expecting the turnaround to happen in a day situation, but there is a sense of urgency that, yes, I think has to be acknowledged, and you do have to move around. And that's what makes it hard, because there's this tension that you've got real people doing real things. And a lot of times you're looking at changes in personnel or a loss of personnel and a lack of morale with the staff and the volunteers. So you just have to balance all those things. And I think, Chris, in a turnaround, it requires a really very prayerful leader, mm-hmm, but also just a leader with the most delicate touch, but still without compromising resolve and moving your organization forward.
Yep. And I'm kind of in that right now with my new position. We had Kathy and Lindsay on one of our previous podcasts, and they talked about how they had this really strong midweek Bible study, but then things with COVID and all that changed. And so that had to go away. And so we're having to kind of turn things around a different direction. So I understand that category. The next one is accelerated growth. And, accelerated growth is great. You come in and there's a lot of resources that can be put into place quickly. You can, if you have the budget, you can hire people to kind of handle some of the growth. So what has happened is probably a church has grown. A lot of people are getting into groups, wanting to get into groups. So you need to hire more directors to oversee maybe campuses. Maybe you're adding sites. And I've been in that situation as well. And it's exciting, and it can happen quickly. One thing you have to be careful of if you're stepping into that situation is that you can burn people out. If you don't add personnel, if you're expecting people to do the same jobs that they've been doing, but just do it at double the level they've been doing because of the growth. And so it's exciting. People are loving it, but also you can burn out leaders and pastors pretty quickly if you don't expand the system.
I see this in our work. This is the one. Well, I don't know if we see this more than any of the other environments, but we see this a lot. You've got a situation where a church is growing faster than its infrastructure.
Yep.
The problems here are the problems that you want to have, but they're problems nonetheless. And when you look at accelerated growth and turnaround, one set of problems is more on the positive side. There's good things going on the turnaround. You've got the opposite of that, but this is where I think, because they're positive in nature, this is where you can get, like you said, Chris, you can get yourself into trouble because you're just riding the wave instead of being intentional. Mm-hmm. And so as it applies to small group leadership, just like Chris says, I think just to be mindful of just how much you're taxing existing staff and looking for ways that you can offer support, whether that's volunteerism or additional staff support.
Another caution on that is we can hire too quickly and get people in just because there's a need and maybe they're not a fit culturally or the chemistry is not there. So you just have to be careful not to just grab people because they're there and you need somebody.
And this is energizing instead of draining as well. When you've got growth, and so that gives you extra energy pellets, if you will, or extra grace for some of these. But you just got to be, I think we just need to be mindful that you are using the extra grace in those scenarios.
Yep.
So a fourth environment is what the author of this book, which I guess we should have mentioned, is Michael D. Watkins, is realignment. And this is a situation where you've got re-energizing a previously successful organization that now faces problems. And what it doesn't say here is new problems or a new set of problems. That's probably just understood. But between realignment and turnaround, I think there's some very subtle distinctions.
There is. And you can, you know, have a lot of the same things between them. But I think one of the biggest differences that I've seen between a turnaround and a realignment is that a turnaround is obvious, that people can see that there's a problem, the numbers have dropped. So you're coming into a situation where everybody understands, yes, there needs to be changes, there needs to be a turnaround. A realignment is not necessarily so obvious. Maybe things have just begun to slip and people are not as bought in as they once were leaders. And so it just needs some tweaks, some changes, some people moved around, some personnel changes. And so you have to do some convincing and selling in a realignment situation more than you would in a turnaround. You know, there's probably still some strength there and it just needs to be moved. It just needs to be changed, and the focus needs to be rechanged or needs to be moved and refocused. And so, yeah, that's where I see those differences between a turnaround and a realignment. It's just convincing people that there is a burning platform they need to change.
Yeah, I think you may see if you find yourself here, I think one of the symptoms may be a pocket of success, or I think if you look the other way, there is an area that is, for whatever reason, a lot of times it's a lack of leadership or a change in leadership, or it's an emerging area that is not getting the attention or the growth or the ministry success that it either has or expected. And so you've got these pockets of success, but then you've got one to three areas that's in need. And that's when you look at a realignment. And Chris, I would think a lot of times here it is – what I've seen happen very well is if you've got a very capable leader for a season of time, you roll that struggling area up under that leader while you're looking for how you're going to, let's just use the word multiply. Mm-hmm. As it gets healthier, then how are you going to move forward? Because this is only for a season. It's not a permanent move. And so you've got to look at how you're going to organize around a new reality.
Yep. Yep.
And I think an example may be
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say is an example like student ministry compared to adult ministry, or a kid's ministry compared to adults ministry, or is there another age group? Are you struggling in men's ministry while women is thriving and you need to mm-hmm. do something there? Those are just examples that we've seen.
That's good. Yep. And then the last environment that you can be in is sustaining success. And this is, you know, stepping in a situation that there's a successful organization, you're following maybe a successful leader, and the job is to kind of take it to the next level, sustaining that success. And so coming into something like this, you don't want to make sweeping changes. You don't want to change the culture. You want to take what is already built and build upon that. And so, you know, this is a tricky one too, because there's probably already a strong team in place. There's a lot of history there of success. And so pushing for changes can be harder. It can be a little bit more difficult to say that we're going to do something differently when something has worked up till this point. And so it's, it's easier and it's harder at the same time. I mean, obviously people are bought in, there's success there, but you know, if you're going to take it to the next level, you've got to make some changes, and there's always changes that can be made to a working model. And so, but it's just recognizing that it's probably going to take smaller tweaks over a longer period of time when you're coming into a sustaining successful model, instead of just wiping things and say, we're going to do it differently. We're going to build on what is already there.
It's pretty interesting, this aspect of the conversation, this sustaining success. I mean, you would think that this is the environment that most people would want to step into, because what you get is you can be choosy. So there is the need to do some things differently. There is the need to take some chances along the way. There is the need to tweak for growth, but you don't have to do anything.
Yep.
So you can, what I've told people is you can choose your moments. And I don't necessarily know how this plays out in ministry, but if you've got a healthy groups ministry or a healthy group, just keep your ear to the ground for low exposure, low barrier changes. I think the wise counsel here is, like Chris said, no sweeping changes. You could also say don't rock the boat. I think when you're in realignment, and turnaround and startup, you don't have a lot on the line with big gambits. But with sustaining success, if you've got success, you've come into that role, this is where you can truly just get a feel for the area. I would liken it to fly fishing. I know the people that are really good at that, of which I am not one. When they hit the river, the first thing that they do is they just pay attention. They'll look at what's flying in the air. They'll wade out and pick up a rock and look at what's under the rock. They'll go just sit on the bank and see what maybe lands around them before they choose their fly, before they choose their moment. And I think this sustaining success is a lot like that. You can just listen for a while. There's no sense of urgency. Put a plan together. And this is like, seems like the true spirit of the first 90 days, where you can take the first 90 days and interview stakeholders, talk to other leaders, take time to put together good interview questions and get good feedback as you're putting together a plan.
No, I think that's a good point, Brian. All of these environments, and he talks about it in the book, involve listening at the beginning and not just doing and changing. But I think each one of these gives you a different length of runway that you have before you want to start making changes. And so sustaining success is the longest runway. I mean, you can take a lot of time, and you probably want to take a lot of time. Whereas with a turnaround, you don't have as long of a runway. If you wait too long, then they're going to want somebody else who can really make a difference quickly. And so it's just different lengths of runway, but you always want to start, no matter what situation it is, learning the culture, understanding what has come before, and honoring that, you know, like you said, interviewing those stakeholders, but then moving towards the future. But you got to start with that listening part.
So that startup, turnaround, accelerated growth, realignment, and sustaining success. And again, this is The First 90 Days by Michael D. Watkins. If you haven't read that, I think even if you're not going through a transition, or maybe that is the best time to read it. I don't know if you just picked this up if you're not.
Anytime. I mean, I read it again when I got to Lifeway, because it was some required reading of a group that I was in. And it's just good stuff that you need to return to, whether you're changing positions or not. So. And we're not getting paid for this.
Sometimes.
They're not giving us any money for this book.
Sometimes you just need to show people that you're conversant in a language or a book culture, if you will, just show that you've done the work. And because so many people have read this book, I think it's just expected that you would have some working knowledge of the premises.
That's a good point.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers podcast. Thank you for being with us. We'd love to hear back from you. Follow us on Twitter, rate us, give us comments wherever you listen to the show. Hope this has been helpful to you. That's gonna do it. This is Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. We'll see you on down the road.